Good morning. I hope you're off to a good start this morning. It is Wednesday, and I'm with Achie Adams, who you know very well from our window seat, which is every second Wednesday. Today, we're doing the whole show from Africa's Travel Indaba, which is the biggest one on the continent. So we're going to call it the window seat Indaba.
Indaba.
Like right. How are you, Achie?
Very good. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, where have you been since we last spoke, first of all? And morning, everybody. Join the comment section. We'll be checking in on you periodically over there as well. Hope that you are ready for a big bumper-packed show. So where have you been?
About 10 days ago. 10 days ago, I arrived back from Dubai, where I attended the Arabian Travel Market.
What's that like?
Very similar to what we're seeing at Indaba, except it's the Middle East or the Middle East region's version of that. It was chaos.
Did you see any great Qatar jets that he's going to get for free? Donald Trump is getting a free plane. You get something for free. You don't say what's under the hood. You say thank you very much.
That's it. You just take it. And apparently he's there in the next week, I think.
He's in Saudi today, I think.
Yeah, Saudi today. And I think in the next week he'll be visiting the UAE.
Yeah.
I was in Dubai at Arabian Travel Market, which is great.
So, I mean, you go through Dubai so often and you're in Dubai so often that you must know a couple of tricks there. I mean, I imagine the times when it's in transit, you're just, you know, waiting for planes.
But look, I've been there a lot. So I do know the tricks.
Uh-huh.
It's a really expensive destination and it doesn't have to be.
Okay.
So if I can give you an example, if you don't mind. I had one of my colleagues who've never traveled overseas. It was his first trip. He was with me.
Yeah.
Wanted to see some of Dubai and needed to find some affordable curios to take home.
Mm-hmm.
And Dubai, you know, as you move further away from the airport, the more expensive it gets.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So the area called Deira is old Dubai. That's where you get the cheapest stuff. So we took a train to get to Deira. A magnet would cost you $100 somewhere else, and we got it for $10.
Okay. So you have to know the shop there. If you don't go there, they'll rip you off.
Yeah, even food.
Hmm.
So we went for lunch, and I promise you, we ate cheaper than we do in South Africa.
Wow. But you really have to know where to go.
You need to know where to go. Here's the trick, though, with Deira. And for South Africans, it's quite appropriate. The guy's name is Tankiso, so he's a big, burly black guy. He looks like a rugby player.
Yeah.
And we go to Deira and he says he feels at home because all of Africa's there.
Oh, yeah?
And he says, Mustach, I don't see any white people here. That's because they can afford to be in the other side of Dubai. He kept getting pulled left and right by the ladies trying to sell him t-shirts and bags.
But there are lots of South Africans there now. Yeah. Lots.
And Africans. Lots of Nigerians, Ghanaians as well. More and more.
Well, let's not leave the Middle East because I do think it's an interesting place and there's certainly a ton of stuff that is happening there travel and tourism-wise. And really, if we do anything on a Wednesday when we do the window seat, it's to open up people's minds and eyes to opportunities they might not have seen before. Now, there's one that's so brand new that I actually heard about it in the news yesterday for the first time. And I was so pleased when Achie brought it up because I thought, okay, good. I mean, shit, talk about having your finger on the pulse, but Abu Dhabi is launching the first new Disney theme park in like 50 years.
Yeah, it's been a while. I think the last one was in Shanghai, and this is the first one since 2010.
Right.
It's a big deal for them.
I mean, most people know Disney World, Disneyland, Euro Disney, the one in China, Shanghai.
Hong Kong, Singapore. Yeah.
Now this is the first new one since then, and appropriately, because it's really the place where all the action is in terms of anybody who's going to spend money on creating tourist destinations, is the Middle East. And this is in Abu Dhabi, so is it going to be on the scale of all the others?
I think so. Dubai, Abu Dhabi, the Emirates don't do anything in half measures. Anything they do has got to be the biggest and the best, so I don't know how long it'll take, but I'll be very keen and interested to visit it as soon as it's open. Dubai in the Middle East, there's no shortage of theme parks. Dubai has their own version called Dubai Parks and Resorts, which is phenomenal. They've got a place called IMG, World of Adventure, which is one of the largest indoor theme parks. Mm-hmm. And in Abu Dhabi, not to be outdone by the cousin, they built the Warner Brothers Studios.
Sure. Don't they also have that island that Ben keeps talking about?
With Yaz me? Island?
Yaz Island.
Yeah.
He's just a Yaz Island. He Yaz just wants to go island. There and yes. hop on the water rides.
So, yeah, Yaz Island is great, and that's where the Warner Brothers Studios are.
Okay.
And they've got a big water world.
Isn't that where Ferrari World
Ferrari
is too?
Ferrari World yeah? is there as well. So lots of theme parks. So it will be interesting to see, you know, if, I don't think there's a worry about it turning a profit for Disney. Because if you've visited any of the theme parks in Dubai, they never full, but they stay mm-hmm. open because it's funded.
Right.
So I think the Disney one will be funded as well. I think it's also one of the appeals for me when I take my kids to Dubai.
Oh, yeah. Kids love it.
There's no queues. The worst thing about Disney World, whether it's in Euro Disney or Orlando, is the queues.
Yeah.
You know, sitting 3 hours to get on your favorite ride, whereas no. in a place like Dubai, you can go on the ride 3 times in 10 minutes.
Right.
Because there aren't any queues. So oh, that is actually
listen,
appeal.
You've sold it to me already. No queues is the no only queues. Thing you needed to say.
Absolutely.
We are in Durban for the Sindaba today, which I'll tell you about in a moment. I saw Bitcoin Boy put up a comment just now about how Gareth's in dirt bin today. I hope Mapelo cleaned up. Well, I got to say in Durban's defense, because I've always loved Durban and I've always been a big advocate for Durban for a number of reasons. But the chief of those reasons is that we were actually up on the roof just now of this property that we're in Gateway. It's the Aha Hotel, which is superb. And we went up onto the roof, and you've got a view, which is excellent, across the whole of, you could see the sun rising over the ocean, all of that stuff. But what's amazing about it is that it was 5:30 in the morning when we went up there. And it's warm. You could walk around without a jacket on. You know, I was up there like this, and I wasn't cold. And that is something that Durban has that really is special. And I believe this is quite an interesting thing. Talk about new stuff that's happening. This is maybe something that you're aware of too. But in case you weren't, I would love to be the first to tell you, because I doubt that this is something novel to you. But apparently South Africa is launching a new Big Five safari destination in KZN. Now, is this news to you?
Well, if you elaborate, maybe it will be.
All right. So apparently this was once emptied of wildlife. But South Africa's Babanango Game Reserve has become a thriving Big Five sanctuary thanks to a bold rewilding effort led by Zulu communities and global conservationists. So since 2018, nearly 5,000 animals have been reintroduced across 20,000 hectares of once degraded land. The project is backed by German philanthropists and community trusts. It also supports local jobs, infrastructure, and conservation education. And Babanango is now a model for combining biodiversity restoration with rural development, proving that when nature thrives, communities can too. It does sound like that was written as a PR piece, but I mean, if there are 5,000 animals being reintroduced, 20,000 hectares of land becoming conserved properly, that's good news.
Absolutely fantastic. Especially
so no one's complaining about that, right? Yeah, that's awesome.
And especially for this region, you know, I mean, they've been through a lot.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of good news coming out. You spoke, I think, 2 weeks ago with Camille about Club Med.
Oh, yeah. Very excited
about
that.
That is really exciting. That's also, I mean, Durban, it's the beach. It's, you know, there should be more all-inclusive resorts on the beach. South Africans love all-inclusive. And I think once Club Med opens, we'll probably see more investment of that sort.
Right.
That is news to me.
Okay, good. I'm always excited. Listen, I've never surprised you before from this point of view, so I'm thrilled.
And that's exciting for the region and, you know, offering that kind of diverse holidays for KZN will be fantastic.
That's awesome. All right, good. So there's some interesting stuff happening all around us. And, of course, the other thing that makes Durban so interesting is it really is like a proper African city, because you can say what you like about Cape Town, and it's beautiful, and nobody hates Cape Town. I mean, I like giving them trouble. I'm seeing James says we can't hear you properly.
Comes a little closer to the mic.
All right, James, just give us the thumbs up if that's all right. So while we're talking about KZN, and we've got a couple of other guests who'll be joining us later on, we're going to be talking about some of the things that are bringing people here and some of the things that people who are here want to do in the rest of the world. And Achie's going to tell us about disappearing places just now, which I think everybody finds pretty exciting. Because there are places in the world where if you don't get there...
might be gone.
Yeah, no pressure. So we're going to talk all about that. And AI is busy doing what it's doing as well. So we're going to find out, I'm sure, what the influence and impact of AI on the travel and tourism business is going to be, because I'm sure it's going to be massive, like it is everywhere else.
Lots of investment and some new things coming out.
For sure. And of course, if you want to find out more about these destinations, you can head along to travel.co.za, where you'll find all of the info. So I was on a plane yesterday to come here, and you know, Lyft, who we flew with, is like really sharp to the point. They don't bugger around. I mean, all of our airlines are pretty damn good, actually, in quality. South Africa. If you have ever traveled domestically in America, you'll know what I mean. Those are some of the most, I mean, first of all, they've got like really, really old stewardesses.
Yeah, really old.
Those people look like they've been there since that plane was put together.
Yeah, since the days of Pan Am.
Someone told me what that is, though. Well, apparently what happens is that these women or men, because they're old men too, and they're not all old, but it's very odd. What happens is that they need to get a certain number of miles so they get free flights for life.
For life.
So they end up working.
So they're working for benefits.
Working for those benefits. And sometimes the old frail lady who pushes the trolley down. And by the way, if you've ever complained about like local domestic travel on planes, you have no idea of what it's like in America. I remember just flying between New York and New Orleans, it was. And it's like a bus in the sky.
Yeah.
I mean, we have absolutely luxurious local travel.
We're very spoiled.
We are.
Especially with Lyft. Thank you, Lyft.
Yeah, Shaman, I'm not being horrible to those old students. I mean, at least they're working, right? but they find a place for these old people.
Absolutely.
It's great. Employment is up. What did I tell you? Tremendous job market. Everything's great. It's superb. It's wonderful. It's fantastic. All right. You can join us in the comments section. We're going to take all the comments that you have. We're also going to speak to somebody who we've had on the show before in a short while, the Chief Executive Officer of Tourvest Destination Management. And we could talk to him about anything in the travel world. He'll be joining us later. It's Martin Wiest. So I'm looking forward to that. And Achie, you've now teased us with this idea of places that are disappearing.
Yeah.
So I immediately, when you told me about this last night, I said to you, Maldives.
Yeah.
But the Maldives are still there. In fact, my sister and her boyfriend are going there in September.
Right.
They've never been before. Very excited. But they didn't bring up that it's not going to be there for a while.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So maybe we should put some context to it, right?
Yeah.
So you know the Maldives is actually made up of a couple of thousand islands.
Yeah, right? Sure.
The little ones, big ones.
Not just the one that you see in National Geographic.
Yeah, not just the resort one or the main island. And every year it actually loses 10 or 20 of them.
Sorry to hear that. Because I've been one of those people who's been making fun of the place, going, they're making this up. That, you know, they're being dramatic.
They are being a bit dramatic because I think when this idea originally came up about disappearing places, Maldives, obviously, I mean, the reasons for disappearing places, there's a variety of them. One of them being obviously climate change, and they were on this climate change bandwagon, and they put actually a date to it, and they said by 2030. Well, we're almost there, and Maldives is still there.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to be careful what you promise. I mean, I remember Al Gore was telling us that the polar ice caps will have completely melted, and places like Miami would be underwater.
And there's danger of these things, but I think they've got the math wrong in terms of.
I think probably one of the biggest dangers for many of these places is population dynamics, economics. Yeah. Those sort of things change migration patterns.
Over-tourism is a big deal.
Over-tourism. Now, this is interesting because you and I were talking about this last time we spoke about Europe.
Yeah.
There's certain places where, like in Spain, for example, they're actually discouraging tourists.
And they
in Barcelona, right?
They're protesting against you.
Yeah. So, they have like people.
if you want to feel at home now, go to Spain, right?
You go to
one,
country.
You're going to have a protest somewhere around you. Secondly, you're going to have load shedding in Spain right now.
Yes.
For Portugal. Yeah. So
all right. Don't listen. We're not trying to put you off anything because Spain is magnificent. And I was in Barcelona, 3 years ago?
Yeah.
Oh, what a place. That's amazing. I mean, that, what is the main street called that goes up the middle there? Where
La Rola, something with an R.
Las Ramblas.
Las Ramblas.
Wow. I mean, I'm probably pronouncing that badly, but that is some place to go and visit. And it's beautiful. And every little, you know, window box outside of every person's apartment has got flowers in it. And it just looks like Barcelona is a show-off city. I haven't been to Madrid. I haven't been to places in like Valencia or anywhere like that. But I believe that they're equally magnificent. And there are obviously places up in the north as well that are very, very pretty. But I would love to go to Spain. They might not want you, though, because over-tourism is an actual thing. So this is what happens when certain places, there are just crowds and crowds of people. It takes you forever to get anywhere because of the queues. You have to look after and look out for things that are being essentially broken down by just too many people, traffic or whatever
a
else.
A great example of over-tourism is Maya Bay. Maya Bay in Thailand became popular.
That was from the beach.
The beach, very popular. The movie came out in 2000 and became so popular that just before COVID, they actually closed Maya Bay down to tourists. And it was such a shame because it is a spectacular spot. It closed for 4 years to try and get the coral to recover, and it worked. So all of the speedboats coming in and out of that place destroyed the coral almost forever. But luckily, the Thai government stopped it. 4 years, COVID came, another 2 years.
And now it's recovered.
It's recovered, it's opened up, and there's now limitations in terms of the number of people. So that would be a place you'd want to see because you're not guaranteed to see it if you visit Thailand.
Yeah.
So if you are going to Thailand, make sure you try and pre-book that trip to Maya Bay. It is worth it. It is phenomenal.
And what do they now only allow a certain number of boats in?
Yeah.
It's incredible. Huh? I suppose you have to break things before you find out what they can take.
And when I went to Thailand quite a while back, I remember as you pull into the bay, I mean, you're blown away. You're on a speedboat. It slows down as it gets close and it comes to a stop. They're literally dropping people off and moving back out to make space for the next 50 boats.
Sure.
So at any given time, we reckon there's about 10,000 people on the beach. So it's the perfect example of the meme, Instagram versus reality.
Yeah.
You'll see the Instagram photo when it's empty. But in reality, there's 10,000 people around you.
Yeah, everybody has to wait for that one girl who has to do her Instagram picture.
In their dresses. So that's a disappearing place.
Okay, so that's one example. I mean, the other obvious one that you've already mentioned to me, so I know that this is one of them, and it's a place that I've been to once, and I love it. It's magnificent. It's one of a kind in the world, and that's the city of Venice.
Yeah. If you're traveling to Venice or plan to travel to Venice, anybody online, take your gumboots with, because the chances of that place being flooded while you're there, water up to knee-deep, is very high. Just a little bit of rain and it floods. So they reckon Venice is sinking. Again, it's a climate change thing, but I think it's a bit of old buildings as well.
Well, it's been there. I mean, Venice has been around as a republic. It's been an independent republic and then it became part of Italy. Yeah. But it's been around since, you know, the early medieval era. And there are beautiful buildings there, like really, really magnificent buildings. You know, with sort of marble floors and ancient stone columns. I mean, St. Mark's in the middle of the big piazza off the Grand Canal is well known as one of the iconic churches of Europe.
Yeah.
And I've seen photographs of that place being flooded, the whole of St. Mark's Square.
Happens almost every summer now.
place. I remember I had the best, I'm not a foodie at all, but I had the best meal of my life ever in a Piazza San Stefano in Venice. And it was just a bruschetta with some tomato on
your
it.
Your favorite.
Like the simplest thing in the world. But they did it so beautifully that I couldn't believe I was on earth anymore. And I really am not a foodie. Anybody who listens and watches this show will know. That's not something that interests me. But you go over little bridges. You get into the gondolas, the famous Venetian gondolas. You've got these old art galleries and people who live in magnificent apartments. Yeah. I mean, we're talking about sort of palatial big apartments with these views out
high
over
ceilings.
The Adriatic, high ceilings. There are some spectacular things to see in that wonderful city, but I'm concerned. Yes. You know, it's built on wood.
Correct.
Because what they did is they drove huge wooden stakes into the ground, and then they built in and around those, nailing it all together. I mean, this is these things are old, so that I don't think that wood is in great condition. I wouldn't build a ship out of it. Let me put it that way.
I think also with some of the investment from hotels and stuff, they do reinforce some of the stuff.
Yeah,
but majority of it, like you say, is still on wood. But it's such a charming town, and you lose their charm if there's thousands and thousands of tourists. So if you are going to plan to go to Venice, which I think you should, do it in the off season or do it just at the end of the summer period, less crowds, and you'll actually appreciate that charm.
Also, it's important to throw in here that if you're going to Venice, then you need to know that sometimes it can be very smelly in summer.
Oh, yeah.
So better to not go in summer.
No, not in summer. Go towards the end of summer. It's much better.
No, rather be a little bit chilly than have it smell like a sewer, because it can, and it's not great. I mean, think about it. Everything empties into the ocean, right, and into those canals. So you have to be picky and choosy.
Yeah, and you'll save a packet if you go at the end of summer anyway.
See, this is what we do. We're here to give you some tips. Yeah, all right. Are there any other places that are disappearing?
Well, there's lots. I'm sure the guys will put in the comments as well what they think. But a lot of people have Kilimanjaro on their wish list. Look, the mountain's not going away, but the snow cap's gone. You'll get to there, it'll just be rock. there won't be that ice cap, that snow at the top, which gives you that iconic look.
Yeah.
So that's melting away. You just need to Google Kilimanjaro 20 years ago when it was completely covered in snow.
Really?
Yeah. To now where it's just the little tip at the top. So there's those places that are endangered from an environmental perspective, the Amazon rainforest, deforestation. But the over-tourism is taking over. Places like Machu Picchu, a lot of people have that on their bucket list.
Machu Picchu in Peru.
Yeah.
I know someone who's there at the moment, and that place, I mean, again, beautiful, but very difficult to get to.
Very difficult. There's different ways to do it. If you've got bucks, you take the Belmont train.
Oh, yeah.
That's going to cost you about $500,000, but it's the best way to do it.
Just half a million.
But it'll be worth it. Or you could do the old way, which is probably the right way to do it. Problem with it, with Machu Picchu is they don't give you advance notice. The Thai government will tell you, we're closing this island. They'll give you a month's notice or they'll tell you about it. Machu Picchu, you'll arrive on the day and say, sorry, we closed. Really? There's too many tourists this week.
Oh, so do they ever close for, because it's high up in the Andes, do they close for weather stuff as well?
Sometimes. Very unsafe. There've been reports over the last 5 years of some landslides, which is dangerous, obviously, for the people that are hiking up. So, yes, they do close for those reasons. But over-tourism is the number one reason. There's just too many people.
I see Durban's Dope says, it's storm surge and spring high tides that flood Venice.
That's it.
Yeah, I mean, spring high tides, but that shouldn't be a reason that your whole city's underwater for, what is it, a couple of weeks every year. So it's a mess. You don't want that.
And then there's iconic things that's happening, which is not over-tourism. I'll give you an example. It's not environmental.
Mm-hmm.
It's more to do with legislation. So there's things you may want to experience in your life. One of them being the Amsterdam's red light district.
Oh no, don't tell me they're going to close that down. This is the hope of so many South African teenage boys.
The Dutch government, whenever it's election time, it's one of the things that's there.
Really?
Some of them say, we'll close it down. Others say, we'll keep it open.
Wow.
And since it's still open, I think the people of the Netherlands know what they want. But there's always a party that threatens to close it down. And you never know who's in charge.
Well, also, you can have governments that are too involved. I mean, you mentioned the Thai government and looking after that famous beach. But there are governments who don't really care and you can go anywhere and do whatever you want. I mean, it used to be the case that in places like Chichen Itza and in Mexico, yeah, you could climb up to the top of the
correct
pyramid and you can go and see this incredible view across the Yucatan Peninsula and see where they would have had ceremonies. And when the sun comes up or goes down at exactly the right time of year, you can see the movement of the snake up the stairs. I mean, it's quite something to see.
Yeah.
But what they've done is, since some stupid American tourist fell,
yeah,
or whatever, now they don't allow people up there.
At so, all.
Yeah. You know, all it takes is one dumb American tourist to ruin it for everybody. And I'm picking on the Americans, but it could be a South African. Could be anybody. You do something stupid and then they shut it down for everyone.
Or they limit it, or you know, and you don't get the full
health and safety people get involved.
You don't get that full experience.
Instagram over tourism and cheap flights has really ruined travel, says Traveling Ninja Turtle.
Ninja Turtle, I agree with you.
You know,
you brought that up.
Yeah.
Instagram over tourism.
Yeah.
So thanks for bringing that up. It segues nicely into a little bit of AI.
Okay, yes. Okay,
so,
because we are, in case you just joined us now and you're wondering what we're doing, it's a special episode of the show this morning. We are live in Durban, actually getting ready for Africa's Travel Indaba, which is the biggest one on the continent. It's kind of like the G20 of travel, right?
Yeah.
You've got all the airlines there. You've got lots of South African tourism destinations. You've got big companies like Tourvest, who have just gone through a rebrand, which we'll all be privy to at some point in the next few days.
Well, this afternoon.
This afternoon, yeah, it all happens. It's a big announcement.
Yeah.
So that's exciting. And you can go and find out about travel destinations, which is really what Achie's here for us this morning to explain, because he's the guy. He's our insider who can help us with all the best at travel.co.za. So just to get back, AI is obviously one of the areas that is just – it's one of the things that's affecting every sector of the economy. And I'm curious, how is that affecting tourism? Because you guys are not immune to this.
Not at all. You've got to embrace it if you want to stay alive. And certainly we are investing in it with our technology, with Travel IT. But the point of Ninja Turtle earlier about Instagram, you know, ruining it for everyone.
Tourism, yeah.
So what Expedia have done, they've created a new AI app that allows you to share a reel you found on Instagram. So you saw a reel about somebody, I don't know, whether it's somebody cooking something or somebody traveling somewhere, and you shove that reel into the app,
yeah,
and it builds an itinerary for you.
Oh, really?
And the problem with that is that people are going to see all these cool places where they get the best photos and shove it in there. It's just something that's going to promote this over tourism a little bit more, especially for those hard-to-find places.
So, I mean, apart from – because this is lazy. In some ways, it's because someone wants to have that photo.
They want the same
photo. That their favorite influencer had. Yeah. In some ways, those people should just not be allowed to travel. Mm. If you ask me, if you are going somewhere just so that you can pose in the same place as your – influencer that you like, I don't know what to tell you. But people also, I don't think they do the research.
No.
They hope that they'll just stumble upon all these tips and tricks that you give us. And listen, if you pay attention to this show every 2 weeks, you'll learn lots of things like this from the window seat. But most people don't do any research.
No. And be original, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I've traveled with you and I've seen you walk the little alleys of Santorini and stuff, looking for your own thing, which is absolutely great, rather than going to the famous spot where everybody takes the photo.
There's a reason those are famous places. I get it. But I think there's something so you just are one of the crowd.
Yeah.
You're one of those people lining up to do the same thing as everybody else. And I can't find it in me to get excited about just doing something because Kim Kardashian did it.
Oh, somebody like that.
You know what I mean? And by the way, she was in a Paris court yesterday, just to bring a bit of news in. Not because she did something wrong, but she was robbed. Remember when she was robbed in Paris? Well, they started the court case.
Did it finally come around?
Yeah. And she was saying, oh my God, I was so scared for my life. And it was so terrible. And they stole one of her rings that Kanye had given her, which cost $2 million. Can you imagine?
$2 million.
Yeah, $2 million ring from Kanye.
$15 million.
Not bad, huh?
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. So that's what Kim Kardashian. That's it. That's her contribution to your morning, everybody.
So we've seen our own version of Kim Kardashian on the Instagram and all of this stuff in Dubai. If you want to go see the Burj,
yes.
Khalifa, a lot of people just take a taxi and they get to the entrance of the mall and take their photos and all of that. I always like to take people to a place called the Wings of Mexico. So it's a little bit out. You've got a fantastic view of the Burj, and it's a really lovely walk through the park next to the fountains to get to the mall. And the whole way you can see the Burj Khalifa, especially at night. We went during the day, and they've got a little frame, one of those Instagram frames that people can stand on and take a photo.
They're going in Cape Town
it's not a well-known spot, the Wings of Mexico. It's got those wings and stuff.
Okay.
So it's not well known. So there's never really a big crowd there. There's two or three people, which is fine. You know, mom and the daughter, that's fine. And there's obviously an influencer there. And you know this because there's three people with cameras and camera equipment. It's one person with a light. One person for the makeup. And there's one person to get the dress flowing in the right wind. So it's a crew of 8 or 10 people, which is actually quite funny to see them standing in a queue to get the photo done. And when they do take the photo, the disgruntled people behind telling them, move on, move on. It's hilarious.
Yeah, I would hate to be one of those influencers. I've often sat somewhere and watched people and they're kind of posing and trying to get the perfect selfie. And these are only the amateur influencers. The professional ones, as you say, always have a crew with them. But I wonder how awkward and embarrassed they must feel, or whether they just eventually have a thick skin about these things, because you're disturbing a whole bunch of people.
Yeah.
You look like you are completely self-involved, which you usually are. You often keep other people waiting. You're pulling funny faces. You're doing weird poses.
And if you're doing those TikTok dances, you're doing it 17 times.
You're doing it a couple of times. It's got to be like one of the most awful jobs.
Yeah, definitely.
Really is. I don't know how anyone wants to be an influencer. I think it's those people who do this stuff, they work hard. It's not as if they don't get, you know, what they deserve for their hard efforts. Some of them are working very hard, especially in places like Dubai where they have to go and fight other influencers for the spot.
It's so funny. Look, Dubai is big enough, I think, to cater to
Sure.
The amount of you know, places they can go and stuff. Another thing that I fell for was the Dubai chocolate craze.
Okay, I was going to say, you don't fall for any of these things.
Well, you know, it's my kids. Around. They want to taste the Dubai chocolate.
Now, why is Dubai chocolate good? Because I've heard, you know, I know the Swiss and the Belgians are always doing their thing.
Well, it's not so much the chocolate as it is the filling. Okay. So they've got this kunafa filling, which is a bit of that crunchy pastry with the I don't know what nut it is, but anyway,
macadamia or something.
Yes, it's a craze, and it's been all over TikTok. And the reason for it is because the chocolate costs R1,000 a slab.
What do they put in there? Like a hair of Alexander the Great.
People are taking bites of this on TikTok. That's it's insane. Like, oh my God, it's amazing. And you know, there's a craze for it. It's R1,000 a slab. Jeez. No, I'm from South Africa. We will find the knockoff. And we found the knockoff, and it was about $100 a slab, which is fine. But I'm not going to lie. It was pistachio.
Oh, I love that. That's okay. That's good.
And it was worth $100.
By the way, you're often the guy who knows these answers just off the top of your head. But ice cream is something some people love, especially when they're in, you know, it's in summer and it's freezing cold. I mean, it's beautiful, warm, and you want this freezing cold ice cream. And Gelato, obviously, a big deal in Italy.
Yeah.
But where are your favorite places to go for something like ice cream?
No doubt, Rome.
Rome?
Yeah. And not the touristy shops. When you were in Rome as well.
Yeah.
So it's a little, there's a chain of stores, whatever, the outside of the main city. I've never had such amazing ice cream in my life. It was so good. I'd have half a liter of ice cream in the morning and half a liter at night. And I did that every day for 5 days.
Half a liter.
I'm not an ice cream guy. I like
wow,
ice cream, but I'm
that
not,
good, huh?
It was that good.
Yes.
And you'd find that shop would be filled with locals, which is great. That's how you know it's a good store. It's proper Italian gelato. And it's all the locals, their little mopeds. It's not even a store where you can sit in. It's like a walkthrough. You walk in, you order, you collect your stuff, you walk out. There's no place to sit. So all of these local Italian guys and girls, mostly youngsters, on their mopeds, parked outside. They buy the ice cream. They sit on the most about. And the place was open till 2 in the morning.
That's the picture, right? Is you want to be on your little motorbike, moped. You want to be in Rome, driving around, stopping for gelato. It sounds too good to be true. Yeah. It sounds like most people's idea of a perfect honeymoon. I was going to ask you, because this has been such a big series for this, is this White Lotus show with those three resorts. So the first one was in Hawaii, I think. Second one was in Rome, or in Sardinia or Sicily, one of the two. Third one in Thailand.
Yes.
And I wonder, because, you know, people are so devoid of the ability to make stuff up themselves or to plan an itinerary,
yeah,
that they probably are going to try and find out where these places are.
Yes.
that those shows were
locations
shot.
Yeah,
and that happens with movies too. I mean, you had that Game of Thrones craziness
in Croatia,
where people,
yeah
all they wanted to do was go and see the scenes, the sites that they filmed Game of Thrones in. So are people doing this too with shows that they find on TV?
It's massive. We call it location travel. We can actually do, we do a campaign around it as well. So we do some research and see what's the popular location spots for it. One of the most popular things is to do the Friends tour in New York, for example.
Oh, yeah. Go to the apartment, the coffee shop.
That's right.
But is there really a coffee shop?
There isn't.
What is it called?
No,
the Central Perk.
No, there isn't. I mean, obviously, that was done in studio.
But no one opened one up somewhere?
The apartment wasn't real either. But yeah, if you watch the show Friends, a lot of the times there's a shot of the outside of a building.
A building, but it's...
Yeah. And just that alone is enough for people to get on that red bus, take photos. I went past the Friends building.
Right.
But location travel is definitely big. And a lot of shows now, choosing the Middle East is obviously going to be there. Game of Thrones. There's a place I can't pronounce. I'm actually going to find it for you during the show.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you that challenge.
Okay.
To pronounce this Scandinavian place. They shut the place down. And it was for the reason that there was a massive scene in Game of Thrones that was shot there. It's like this, you know, fjord scene in these high mountain cliffs and stuff. So those shows do promote a lot of it. And you'll see the comments on the movies, oh, this was shot here, or this was shot there. Star Wars is a big thing, you know, people going to Ireland trying to find Luke Skywalker, you know, at the Jedi Temple.
Yeah, he would have been on that island
somewhere.
Got you.
So location, it's actually a thing.
Right, okay. So what's this list of destinations that you've looked for?
No, I'm just going. I was just looking at all of these places.
That are still
the endangered places.
Okay, I saw Madagascar or Mozambique made the list.
Yeah, a lot of it is from the deforestation and stuff.
Right.
I'm looking for the interesting ones. So if you like wine, Bordeaux, that's in danger. So
no, you're joking.
Prices are going to skyrocket. Well, start going up, you know, and that's because of the temperatures around the world. Apparently, I'm not the expert.
You mean you can't pick up like the nutmeg?
No, I don't get it.
The walnut.
But apparently, the Merlot grape is extremely sensitive to heat.
Okay.
And with the current changes in the temperature and stuff like that, it's the opportunity to grow and make Merlot is getting less and less. And in the Bordeaux vineyards, 40% of the grapes grown on those vineyards since 1950, 40, that's more than almost half, are these Merlot grapes. So if they're in danger, you're going to get less of that.
Now, I hate to climb on someone else's misfortune here, but would that be a good thing for our Cape Merlot red wine industry?
Yes, it
probably would, right?
If the demand goes up, the price goes up.
I was thinking, is Table Mountain under any danger of being over-tourismed?
I don't think so. I think because we've got the one cable car and can only take so many people.
Okay.
The Western Cape government decides to award another company, another cable car, okay, then we can talk. But right now, I think the one cable car is fine, and only the fit people make it to the top when they do the hike. So I think Table Mountain's
fine. I'm sure there are lots of animals in the Kruger Park that feel like we've got over-tourism there.
Oh, yes. But, they're so used to us. They know how to open doors.
Yeah. But that place is so huge that you... It's knowing where to go inside of Kruger. And I've got family and friends who love going there.
But they
they know all the secret places.
I think SA National Parks do a really good job. I mean, I know they get flack for certain things.
I've heard some of that from high praise from lots of people.
And if you compare that to other places in Africa that offer a similar product, Safari, for example, they do manage that really well. I think they do.
All right. Well, let us know what you think. And where you would want to go before it's gone, just drop us a comment in the YouTube, and we would be happy to reply, pop it on screen, see what you have to say about that. Now, this is a canyon in Iceland. Oh, okay. So Iceland has got some crazy names. So Achie's just found the name of this canyon in Iceland that was closed off. The tourists flocked to the location. Why? Because it was seen on Game of Thrones. It's a very beautiful sort of valley. It is called... Fjarðarljúfur.
Well done. Yeah, I don't know if that's right.
Fjarðarljúfur Canyon in Iceland. That's, I think, how you pronounce it, but I could be horribly wrong as well.
Well done.
And then you've got that volcano, remember, that erupted and stopped tourism some years ago.
Please don't erupt again.
Yeah, we don't need that. That thing's also got a name this long that no one can pronounce unless they are from Iceland.
They just call it the Iceland.
Listen, I've heard such beautiful things about Iceland. In fact, I know two people who were there in the last 2 years. Both of them have said it was exceptional. One was like a family trip, a family of four that went there, and they, you know, toured the place. Probably now you would think kids would be bored in Iceland. These kids are just old enough that they could do all the outdoor stuff, and it was in the middle of summer. So that's when Iceland's nice. You don't want to be there in the middle of winter.
No, I'd love to see that black beach they've got.
Yeah, and you've got volcanoes and waterfalls and springs, hot springs. It's phenomenal. So that's definitely a place on my list too.
Yeah, at some point, definitely want to get there.
Yeah, I think that probably another place that I'm very keen, a friend of mine has just got back from 7 months of travel.
What?
Yeah. Don't ask me how.
7 months.
He says he's got no money left, but this is what he wanted to do.
Jeez.
And he said he was just blown away by Mexico, which I've been to. I've been to Cancun, but I haven't been to the rest of it. And Mexico is on the up and up, hey?
Yeah, I think since Trump's come in, it's gotten better.
People love Mexico.
They love it.
And Mexico City is apparently spectacular. But he was telling me about Merida, which is in central Mexico. And he said that there is real romance there. Like, you see couples kissing passionately in the street. There's Latin music playing. Romance is not dead. If you're one of those people who's given up on romance because you live in the Western world, I got great news for you. Just go to Central and South America.
I think the tequila helps.
Oh, hell yeah. I'm sure it does. But he said there's just music playing on these squares. And you know, every town, every city has these big public squares. And they've got food all around. And people just dancing. And genuinely happy, like excited, sophisticated, cool cultural environments to be in. So that's probably a place that's underrated. And I think South America, even more so, places like Argentina, Uruguay, Paraguay, Brazil obviously gets a pretty good rap from people who love traveling to South America.
I think it's affordable for us as well as South Americans.
Yeah.
I know Mexico, if you're not going to the you know, Cancun and stuff like that, which you can still get a good deal. Yeah. But all the other places in Mexico, I mean, your rand quite takes reasonable. You quite far, yeah.
Well, your rand is almost one-to-one there.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Turkey used to be. I'm not sure if Turkey still is.
Turkey's not as it was before, but
okay.
Still is, yeah.
All right. Well, we're going to chat to Martin Viest in just a moment or two, because he's also here at the Africa Travel in Durban, and we're going to find out what the world of Tourvest destination management can tell us about that. Don't look so surprised, Martin. Come and join us here. Come and have a seat. Achie and I want to talk to you. All right. So, in case you don't know who he is, he's the CEO of Tourvest Destination Management. Let's go a little bit more this way.
There we go.
How are you?
Strong.
Nice to see you.
Nice to see you as well.
We were going to be on the roof, but we couldn't find the lights. So,
and it would have been too romantic in the dark.
I don't think anyone wants to see us, but for those who do, here we are. Hi, everybody.
Hi.
All right. So, how are you, first of all, and what's been happening with TDM?
Firstly, I'm extremely well.
Good.
It's nice to be back at Indaba. It's my 35th Indaba this year.
35.
Yeah, and my very first Indaba was at the Holiday Inn in Van der Bijl Park, and we were 36 exhibitors and 25 international buyers.
35 years of doing the Indaba is, for most people, that's onto their second marriage already.
For me too.
All right, so what happens there? What is the Indaba all about?
So Indaba, traditionally, before the arrival of digital communication, was really a once in a year meeting up with your customers, negotiating the following year's contract, introducing them to new product that you wanted to sell to them, that type of stuff. In the meantime, it's more a keep connected as human beings show, because you do everything else in a digital fashion. You really don't do contracts anymore at an Indaba.
Sure.
We're in the people's industry, and you still want to see the people, and you still want to have a glass of wine with them, and you still want to have a coffee with them in the morning.
Right.
And connect on an interpersonal level, and that's what Indaba is there for. I guess there's, for us on the African continent, three trade shows that are really relevant. It's WTM in November in London, it's ITB in March in Germany, and then it's Indaba in May.
This is one of those three big ones.
Yeah.
Who else goes to this Indaba? I mean, we were talking earlier that all the airlines are there. From a destination point of view, who are the major exhibitors?
Yeah, it's a big, it's a large cross segment. So it's municipalities, it's regions. I went to see the Hibiscus Coast yesterday, which is the south coast from Durban downwards. It's provincial tourism authorities, it's national tourism authorities, so it's all the government and parastatal environments.
And what are they trying to sell? Are they selling their destinations to airlines, to local tour operators, to people who want to bring people in from all over the world? Who are they trying to reach?
Largely, it's South Africa has got a challenge in terms of the geographical spread of tourism, because the tourism in South Africa really happens in the Western Cape plus a game reserve,
right?
And the geographical spread doesn't reach the whole country, so the economic benefit of tourism doesn't reach the whole country. The provincial tourism and the regional tourism authorities are of the view, rightfully or wrongfully, that the only way to fix that is to exhibit themselves and to highlight the benefits of their region to an international contracting environment. I think the geographical disbursement of tourism is largely driven by the consumer itself.
Okay.
I think the consumer chooses to go Western Cape plus a game reserve. So I'm convinced that exhibiting at a trade show will help.
If I were a German tourist or an American tourist, I'd fly in either to Otjimbo or Cape Town Airport.
Yep.
And I'd usually only have Cape Town and a safari on my list, right? Yeah. That's what most of them do. Now, who can interrupt that process to get them to open their eyes to some other options?
I think it strongly depends on repeat customer base. I think a first-time consumer that travels to South Africa will do what they perceive to be the highlights, which is Cape Town, Garden Route, Bush.
We mustn't leave the Garden Route out. Shame.
Don't forget our Garden Route. And it's user-friendly.
Yeah, sure.
But first-time consumers will do that. They'll do what I would consider the race route. And that is brutally impacted by available time and available money, sure. and mainly time. So I remember distinctly when I started in Tourvest, or was became Tourvest late in November 87, the average length of stay in South Africa was 26 days of a holiday.
Sure.
The average stay that we currently have is 11 days. And just the average length, and that's a global thing. This is not specific to South Africa. People take more holidays, but shorter. And the 11 days simply don't allow for the geographic disbursement that we're talking about. So I think it's natural that they take the perceived safe highlights. So tourism is often about personal safety because you don't want to expose yourself.
And we sometimes get a bad rap on that front too. I mean, sure, we, you know, sometimes it's deserved and we could always do more. But I think South Africa in...
So we get a worse rap than we deserve.
Absolutely. And I don't think that that's fair either.
Yeah.
So I'm interested from your point of view, Martin, when you think about the international tourist, and we're obviously trying to promote tourism to South Africa, and SA Tourism do a lot there. And, you know, we've got a minister now whose job it is to try and promote that as well. What do you think the major inhibiting factors are? Because certainly cost is not one of them. To anyone from almost anywhere, we were just talking about Mexico and Turkey, which are about the only two currencies that match up to ours in any which way in the world. For most other countries and for most other people from countries that have a lot of tourists, we're a cheap destination, so it's not money. Do we have enough flights in and out? Do we have enough accommodation? Do we have enough activities for people to do? Is transport a problem once you get here by plane? Like, what would you advise if you suddenly could click your fingers as tourist minister and make a difference?
Yeah, so I think cost is a material aspect of it, and not because of what the land cost is, but what the air cost is to get here.
Well, it's far. It's prohibitively expensive for some
people. And because of lack of capacity that you touched on, the pricing of international airfares, but I'll give you the number. So in 2019, which was our best year ever from a volume perspective, the average international economy return out of our core source market, which is Europe, was 600 euros.
Mm.
Our average return airfare today is 1,800 euros, triple.
Wow.
So it makes a huge difference because those 1,000 euros difference, 1,200 euros difference is 24,000 rand difference.
Yeah.
And if you add that to the land, it makes a difference. So, that's driven by capacity. There is not enough capacity.
So it's demand and not enough supply.
Correct. And the supply is curtailed by the Department of Civil Aviation,
right,
who don't give more landing rights and more slots to other people. And
what's the holdup, guys?
Historically, it used to be protectionism about over SAA. But
that's not a thing anymore.
It's still around, but
I know it's still around, but it's not a thing to have the protectionism.
I agree with you.
And that's probably an inheritance of the old regime. It's like pre-94 stuff to South Africans, right?
So that's first bottleneck, if I can call it that.
All right.
The second one is that we certainly need a more efficient, more quickly moving and more entrepreneurial South African tourism. You know, at the end of the day, the consumer, wherever they sit, you know, Gareth, if you sit in Germany, you look German.
So do you, actually. I'm sure you are.
if you sit in Germany, you've got the world as your oyster. You have hundreds of destinations that you can choose to go on holiday, and you want to make an aspirational choice, and that aspirational choice has to be triggered by something, and that trigger has to be our national tourism authority that makes it aspirational to travel to South Africa. And that's currently not happening. It's not happening the way it should.
Need to get all those irritating influences that Achie and I were talking about earlier and get them to go, you got to come to South Africa opposing it. But I do think also we've got to be cognizant of the fact that South Africa is quite a long way for Europeans, certainly North Americans, even Asians. It's a hell of a long way to go. And we are down on the southern tip of Africa, which is a huge continent. Yeah, if you could go to Dubai, or if you could go to Mexico, or you could go to any of the other places that we discussed earlier, it's not as far. to go. So you've really got to make it a sexy attraction.
Yeah, and there's so many aspects of South Africa that are phenomenal. I always felt, you know, for many, many years, I was sales director for tourists for Europe. You know, we are counter-seasonal. When it's miserable winter there, we have beautiful summer. We have no time difference to Europe. So you don't arrive in your jet lag for the next two weeks before you're allowed to go home. We have unbelievable value. We have the world in one country. Used to be the byline of South Africa. You've got anything from mountains to ocean, from bush to beach. I mean, the diversity of landscapes and experiences we offer is unmatched anywhere in the world. But the potential consumer has to know that. And then he will sit for an extra 4 hours in an aircraft. From a tourist perspective, our quickest growth perspective, he asked me earlier on where are we really making impact at the moment, is East Africa. And East Africa, purely because they've got more air capacity, they have less of a reputational topic, because they're not cheaper once you're on land. As a matter of fact, they're more expensive once you're on land.
Are you talking about places like Zanzibar and
Kenya and its natural game reserves, Tanzania, as a matter of fact, our fastest
growing
destination.
And by the way, I mean, let's not support South Africa at the cost of any of these countries and vice versa. But there are some magnificent hotels and resorts and really, really top draw stuff up there.
Yeah, magnificent. And I'm sure you're going to speak to Mike just now, who's our MD up in East Africa. I mean, it's a beautiful, beautiful destination. But is it, from a quality perspective, better than South Africa? I don't think so. Is it diversity as broad as South Africa? I don't think so.
It's accessibility.
It's accessibility. It's, and it's reputation.
And sure, they get that migration once a year. We've got all of our animals just chilling in the Kruger Park all year round.
They don't have to move because they've got food the whole
everything's
year.
Everything's there, theirs have to keep scavenging.
It's feast time.
Exactly.
Yeah, but that's where our growth currently is. But I think it's a lot of what tourism does worldwide anytime is driven by air capacity and air and flight pricing. And that's what we need to work on here.
The accountants need to get to work on that immediately. All right, before you go, because I haven't seen you, we certainly haven't had you on the show for a couple of months now.
Tragedy.
I know, it's affected everything. The ratings, it's all gone to shit.
Yeah.
But I do have to ask you quickly, because you have been in the travel business for such a long time. You know it like the back of your hand. You've done Indaba, you said 35 years in a row. What's your favorite place to go? And where do you just love, if I give you 6 months off and I said, all right, you can go to any three places in the world and it's all expenses paid, do whatever you like, what would you do?
Ooh, difficult.
Where would you go?
I've just come back from St. Helens.
I was about to say.
Okay, so I've got friends, you mentioned the Hibiscus Coast, I've got friends down on the South Coast that are flying to and from St. Helena the whole time. They say it's magnificent. I met Eric Weinstein last year, who's a regular there. Douglas Murray's been there, some of the other people that I've interviewed.
You should go there.
Apparently, it's unbelievable. So apart from the fact that before you mentioned it or before I've spoken to any of these people who've been, all I knew about it was it was the exile site of Napoleon, right? He's got his house that he lived in there, and he died there. And
it was also the exile place of many of the Boer
generals
after the Anglo-Boer War.
So why do you love it?
I love it because it's got exceptional scuba diving with whale sharks. I do a lot of scuba diving. But what I really enjoyed was the combination of history, landscape, ocean.
Apparently they've got like four or five different climate zones on this tiny island.
And they've got amazing hiking trails, and we did a lot of hiking there. So, and it's 4 hours from Joburg, so it's not far. It's halfway to Rio.
Apparently, that airport is newish. It's what, like,
open 2019.
Yeah. Right.
Before then, the only way to get there was by ship two weeks out of Cape Town.
And there was only one every couple of months, right?
I mean, there's only 4,000 people that live there. They're called saints. So St. Helena is one. So how long have I got? I've got six months.
You got 6 months. You got three places. 6 months to travel. Where else would you go?
I would go back to the southern tip of Argentina.
Tierra del Fuego.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that. Luengo.
Like Patagonia, yeah?
Yeah, Luengo, Kid and myself went there early last year in order to see if we can open a drifters operation there, which is still work in progress, but it is magnificently wild. Really wild.
Very sparsely populated.
Yeah, wide open spaces. Right. It's sort of the Karoo and a bit colder. So I find that amazing. And then last but not least, I enjoy my my ancestral home country, which is Norway. My mother is from Norway and my grandmother is from Norway. So and I really like the northern part of Norway, the empty spaces, the fjords. So those would be the 6 months that I would spend.
Not a bad selection. Hachs, what do you reckon? 10 out of 10. All right. Well, thank you, Martin. It's good to see you. We're going to take a quick break. It's just after 7 o'clock. We'll be back with more, and we've got a couple of guests popping in. In case you're wondering why we're sitting here, we were going to be up on the roof, but we couldn't find the light earlier. I didn't want you staring into darkness. And we decided to come down here because we have all the internet and all the other things that we need. But I promise you, Indaba itself will be a whole lot more interesting than these walls straight behind us. But we will be back in just a moment. Don't go anywhere.
Hello.